Hello and welcome to Mercy Echoes, the official podcast of Mercy International Association. My name is Brenda Drum and I'm delighted to be bringing you another episode of our podcast. Mercy International Association is an organisation of the leaders of Mercy congregations, institutes and federations throughout the world, founded to serve the Sisters of Mercy, their associates and partners in ministry. The purpose of our association is to inspire Sisters of Mercy and their associates to incarnate the spirit of Catherine Macaulay in ways which are creative and appropriate to the needs of our time, and to foster unity of mind and heart among Sisters of Mercy worldwide. We have our base in Baggot Street in Dublin, in the original House of Mercy, opened by Catherine Macaulay in 1827. If you would like to get in touch with us about our podcast, please email brendadrum@mercyinternational.ie. On this episode of Mercy Echoes, I am joined by Mary Pat Garvin, a Sister of Mercy of the Americas. Mary Pat serves as an educator, consultant and facilitator for national and international institutes and conferences of religious. She has a particular interest in working with formators of religious, recognising the need to prepare newer members for a religious life that is global and culturally diverse. Her ministries and service to religious life and other organisations have included being a member of the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas Institute leadership team from 2011 to 2017, a co-designer of and teacher in the UISG International Programme for the Preparation of Formators, interim co-executive director of the Religious Formation Programme, and a faculty member of the Institute of Psychology at the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome. Mary Pat holds a doctorate in psychology from the Pontifical Gregorian University, where she served on the faculty for 8 years. Her research interests include the interplay of spirituality and psychology in promoting a healthy and holy living of religious life. Earlier this year, Mary Pat was presented with the Outstanding Leadership Award from the Leadership Conference of Women Religious in the US. And we were determined not to let the end of the year pass without getting her onto the podcast for a chat. I was delighted to speak to her earlier this month, and I began by asking her to talk to me about her life and ministry.
Thanks, Brenda. First, let me just thank you for this invitation to be with you and the Mercy World through this podcast. And I've really appreciated the ones that you've had so far. So my life and ministry. I'm one of five. I was born outside of Philadelphia, and we grew up in what was the country, now is the suburbs here in the United States. My parents were very encouraging. They always told us to try new things and to, you know, really explore. And I had the wonderful opportunity to attend Catholic school, elementary school, secondary school, and university. And actually, that's where I met the Sisters of Mercy. And specifically, the very first Sister of Mercy I ever met, Sister Mary Jude, I will be having lunch with her next week. She's a strong, going forward 95-year-old. So it's been a life of mercy in my life and my family's life. I loved learning. I love sports, crafts, music. And in my parish, which began right when I went to first grade, I was really involved. As a teenager, played in the, as we used to call it, the folk group for Sunday liturgies. And then at 19, it was a little young, but at 19, I became a sixth grade teacher in a very small school. And I actually taught for 4 years before entering the Sisters of Mercy. And I really fell in love with education. I fell in love with, you know, helping people discover things. And really, it has set me on a path for my future ministries. So ministry as a Sister of Mercy, most of it has been spent in education. I entered in 1977. And after the postulancy, after the novitiate, I returned to teaching. I'd spent 12 years in several of our Mercy elementary schools in Pennsylvania, Florida, and then I moved to high school in the Philadelphia area. And then, unexpectedly, in 1989, my congregation's leadership team invited me to go for further studies. So I went to graduate school. And they asked me to consider an interdisciplinary degree in philosophy, theology, and psychology. in preparation for ministering in both initial and ongoing formation. And so I attended the Gregorian University in Rome and earned a doctorate there. So really, that set me up for my work since 1994.
It's very, very clear that you have a deep love for education from early on. You could almost say, like, for a lifelong love of education. It's lovely to hear that. When did you realize that you mentioned that you taught for 4 years, starting as a 19-year-old, and I know it felt young maybe back then. I think it even feels younger now for some reason, the idea of somebody at 19, but. What was that moment when you realized that, okay, I love education, but there was something calling you to religious life? Was there a light bulb moment? Was it a very gradual thing? And you obviously mentioned that sister that you're having a lunch with, but what can you remember the moment where you said, this is the path that I think is for me?
I don't know if it was so much of a moment or just kind of like a slow dawning. My first 2 years teaching elementary school, I worked in a school that was run by the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart, and they were wonderful, and I loved the teaching. And then, out of the blue, I had an invitation to teach actually in my very home parish, which was staffed by the Sisters of Mercy. And so I spent the next 2 years teaching 7th and 8th grade. That's like the 12 and 13-year-olds here in the United States. And I think it was just interacting with the sisters, seeing how they interacted with each other, how they loved education. I knew the Sisters of Mercy were also involved in healthcare and social work and parish ministry, but my lens was education. And so I think it just slowly dawned on me that maybe this would also, fulfill me in a deeper way, without leaving education, but to move towards discernment of a vocation.
You had a lovely phrase there, slow dawning. And I think if you ever decide to write your memoir, you have your title.
Thanks, Brenda.
Now, one of the reasons that we really wanted to talk to you on the Mercy Echoes podcast was to acknowledge the Outstanding Leadership Award that you were presented with in August of this year from the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. And it was a wonderful occasion. So congratulations from all of us in Mercy International Association. Can you talk a little bit about your reaction to hearing that you were going to receive that award? And what was it like to be on that stage?
Oh my. Well, it was I think, as I said that evening, humbling and overwhelming. And really came again out of the blue when I received the phone call from the executive director, Carol Zinn from LCWR. When I knew that I needed to give a reflection following the award, what came to me was a line from the poet Mary Oliver. And she says, keep your heart open, always keep some room in your heart for the unimaginable. And actually, it was unimaginable. I think what was special, especially leading up to the award, which was presented in August of this year, was working with LCWR, and working with this group of women that really every day spend their time nurturing all the congregations, not only in the United States, but also contributing around the world. Sister Amory Sanders, an Immaculate Heart sister from Scranton, is really the person that journeys with whoever is the recipient. And so working with her was an experience of really seeing alive what was at the heart of LCWR. And also, I said to Anne-Marie and included it in my reflections, I think my selection was a reflection of the members of LCWR themselves. What they saw in me and what they raised up for the nomination and selection was really also what they held dear in their own leadership for their community, both in ongoing and in initial formation. So I really felt like it was a reflection of their hope and desire for the future that they perhaps just happened to see in me, but there's many others also that work in this field.
Can we talk a little bit now about formation? It's a word that we use a lot in the Mercy world and also in the world of religious life. Can you talk to me a little bit just about formation, just that word itself, and also in the context of when we say formation in the religious context and also formation in the Mercy context as well?
Yes, the word formation goes in and out of style. But it is from what I think of as really the taking on of the mind and heart of Jesus in the tradition, we would say in the Mercy world, in the tradition of Catherine. In the United States, we speak of incorporation from the Latin to bring someone into the body of the community. But it is a formation of the heart and the mind, not in a hierarchical or oppressive manner, but in a way that a person can take on the heart and mind of Jesus and the heart and mind of Catherine McCauley. I think there's many things about formation that have evolved over the years that really have helped us see what is really important to make sure that we allow the woman to discover and to deepen in her own life, her spiritual life. My own contribution to formation for the Mercy world, but also for other congregations that I've worked with around the world, is looking at the psycho-spiritual perspective. Because I come from an interdisciplinary background, how is it that the more we can grow in our humanity, our human development, that is the foundation of all our spiritual development? I many times say, the only stuff God has to work with is our humanity. I mean, God interacts with us through all of our senses. And so the more we can come to understand and accept ourselves, the more that we will perceive and notice how God is speaking to us. So in my work in formation, as what we're always trying to do is look at what is strengthening us or what might be inhibiting us sometimes from being able to take on the mind and heart of Jesus. So work such as, discovering things such as, our emotional intelligence and how that is so important in our prayer life, in our community life, in really being able to be effective in our ministerial life, looking at and exploring community life and communication skills and conflict resolution, our sexuality, and everything we do, is part of who we are as a whole person. And so how is it that we understand our sexuality and how that influences us every day? Looking at the vows from both a theological stance, but also a psychological stance. And, things like the vow of obedience. What is our capacity for deep listening and deep dialogue, which is called for in the vow of obedience, or in the vow of poverty? How is it that poverty of spirit is at the root of all the different ways that we live our healthy dependence on God and interdependence with all of our sisters and all of those that we minister and serve with? So, I think around the world, more and more, we're seeing that it is strengthening our humanity, our human development, that really allows us then to be able to surrender and let God help us grow in our spiritual development. And so I think that's a really part of formation.
I read something that you said once where you said that one lens isn't really enough to understand the human person. Will you unpack that a little bit for me?
Yes. You know, I think it connects to what I was just saying that, you know, let's continue with the topic of formation. If the only thing we do in formation or in incorporation is look at the spiritual and theological aspects of our life, that's wonderful, but it's not enough. And what about our psychological, which, you know, the word psychological meaning human. So what about our humanness, you know, and so growing in that area? Or, you know, we don't usually talk about philosophy too much these days, but what is our search for meaning? What is the ground on which we stand, which we might often always put in the spiritual or theological category, but it's also broader than that. And so how is it that when we look at things, anything in our lives, we can maybe braid together our theological, spiritual, psychological, philosophical? And you don't have to use those big words, but you just kind of shift your stance a little bit when exploring a topic.
It's I mean, formation as well as a word and a concept, it's almost looks a little different for even within the Mercy world, because there are different needs. Obviously, there is the formation for those who are taking the vowed and non-vowed, and I think it's probably going to change again into the future. And I suppose linked to that, I suppose, are a lot of the changes that have come in religious life. Would you reflect a little bit on what you have experienced in terms of the changes in the experience of religious life over the past maybe 20 years?
Yeah, when I hear the word change, although I use it all the time myself, I often think, you know, I don't know so much, is it a change or is it a evolution or a development? And I would hope it's also a development in the direction of deepening, you know. But I think at the heart, at the core of both formation and religious life, our core has remained the same, you know, rooted in God, sent on mission, you know, followers of Jesus in the tradition of Catherine. The surface elements have definitely changed, you know. Not many in the Mercy world these days live in large convents with a lot of different sisters. That was a reality in the past, and that's not too much in the present, although there's some of that does exist. How we dress has changed, you know? And that is, you know, how we dress is a statement, but it's also not an identity. And so how is it that, you know, that has changed, but hopefully who we are as women religious in the world today is at the heart the same. Also, our ministries, you know, Mercy's were well known for education, healthcare, social service, but now there are many, many, many different ministries that we are involved in. And so I think not putting down the changes that have happened, but at the deepest, deepest heart of who we are, I think that is still relevant and still the same, hopefully, since Catherine McCauley and even before that time. But how we live our lives has evolved and developed over the years.
What do you think Catherine McCauley would make of the Mercy world today and how things have evolved, to use your word?
Oh, my goodness, Brenda.
That's
a
an
great
easy question.
No, I was thinking that's a hard question, but it's a really good question. Wow. You know, she was a woman with foresight, a sense of humor, depth, creativity, willing to take risk. I think she would see that in us today. I'm sure she'd be a little surprised about some things. I mean, the whole technological world would kind of probably give her a little spook, but again, what was her deepest desire in life, I think she would see alive in the Sisters of Mercy today.
And do you feel that, like, do you feel Catherine, not so much on your shoulder, but do you feel her with you when you're starting something new or maybe looking at things in a new way? Do you always like to know that you have that link back to her, what she started and what she'd be doing today?
Yes, I mean, it we do things differently, as we've just mentioned, but the heart of she was responsive to the hungers of the world. She was responsive to the areas of life that needed the mercy touch. And I think that often comes to me. What is it that the Sisters of Mercy have to offer, and every congregation? And our associates, our companions, our co-workers, we all have something to offer. But how is it that we might be seeing it through the eyes and lens, speaking of lens, of Catherine McAuley? And I think, we have her letters. We have the Path of Mercy, which Brenda, thank you so much for sending that to Pope Leo. But we have the Path of Mercy, the book by Mary Sullivan. And how is it that the more we align ourselves and really can tap into how did Catherine approach the world, then we hope to do the same, because Catherine was a follower of Jesus and we are. So But we kind of, the conduit to that, to Jesus, is through Catherine McAuley.
When you mentioned there about the technology, it was a conversation that came up the other day when we were talking a little bit about social media and mercy, the mercy world. And someone posed the question, if Catherine McAuley was here, would she be on Twitter, or X? I think she probably would.
That's good.
I read somewhere else as well, as I've been doing a lot of reading about you, that and this kind of speaks, I suppose it's almost like an anti sort of antidote maybe to the world of kind of websites and that, and that you actually never created a website, but you were called on and found by word of mouth in terms of religious congregations when they were looking for someone to come and do formation or to deliver formation program, that they found you. And it's a lovely it's a lovely, I was quite just kind of tickled by it when I read it. And I assume there's no plans now to do a website.
No, and I was kind of surprised. I guess I just never even thought of a website. Probably one of the things is that I mentioned earlier that I went to the Gregorian University in Rome. I later was on the faculty there, and it is an international program. They take about 15 or 16 students a year in the psychology department. And they have to be from the six continents every single year. So teaching there for many years and always having students from all over the world, that probably took the place of, a website. And then since COVID, since the pandemic, when everything, as we know, closed down, I was encouraged to do what I usually did in person online. So I didn't know how to do that, as most of us did not know how to do that, but I did start teaching online. So working as I do with formators all over the world, teaching classes was probably also taking the place of the website. But yeah, I was kind of surprised that that was surprising to people.
What do you think formation in the context of religious life and around religious orders, and even in the context of formation in the mercy world, will look like into the future as we move towards there being almost
fewer sisters, but almost a greater need for formation of non-vowed in the Mercy world. Have you given thought to that? Is it something that you're that I presume that you've something that you've come across in terms of who you're working with in formation?
Yes. One, I think we always have to remember, and there's been a lot written about this, that the large growth of religious life, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, was an anomaly. That religious life was always on the smaller side, you know, but for the last 100 or so years, it grew, you know. And that's happening in the Southern Hemisphere right now. So the same dynamic is happening, that there's large numbers of men and women looking at religious life. So just to remember that it's never been as big and as it has been for the last 70, 80 years. I do work with our associates here in the United States. When I was on our leadership team of the Sisters of Mercy of the Americas, I was a liaison to our association program, and that is our the men and women who take on the charism of Catherine McAuley and live it out in their own way. And so there is that piece of formation going on also. I think in the future for women religious, and in the Mercy world and beyond, you know, how do we continue to meet women where they are in their life journey? You know, formation or incorporation in years long ago, when there were large numbers, had to be more of a communal kind of thing. But now, how do we provide our women with individual accompaniment as they learn more about themselves? They confirm what they already know about themselves, and then also learn more about the congregation and how they discern. So how do we walk with those women individually and allow the seed of vocation to religious life, or perhaps at times to other ways of life, to grow and develop? And how is it that we hopefully are able to provide them what I call graced companionship? You know, graced companionship, being able to offer them energy and vision and support, while we also, as members of the Mercy community, the Mercy world, offer each other grace companionship. But I think it's about meeting the women where they are, helping them grow in their own humanity and then their own spirituality, and being able to walk with them individually so that the discernment that they do finally come to some decision about which way their life should go is really grounded in themselves, in their prayer, and in their experience of mercy or whatever congregation it is today.
Mary Pat, you've had an extraordinary life in ministry. Now, I'm not in any way suggesting your swan song or anything, but is there anything left on the wish list in terms of life, career, ministry that you would still like to do or like to do? I'll take that word still out, that you would like to do.
I love what I'm doing. You know, I really am always energized. It also takes the whole of me to do it. But I really am energized and love working with people, both individually and as formation teams, you know, and as congregations and leadership teams. So for right now, I think that's how the time will go.
We have a phrase here in Ireland. I think it comes from County Cork, and where people say they're happy out. So I think what I'm hearing from you is that you're happy out doing what you're doing. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah,
Which is
thank you.
great. Which is what isn't that a wonderful place to be at any
Yes.
particular stage. Yeah. I've run out of questions. It's been wonderful to chat to you, and it's been wonderful just to reflect a little bit on formation. And I know that you wanted to finish by sharing something with us.
Yes, you know, as I was thinking of our conversation, Brenda, I love the very last paragraph of our constitutions. And I just thought it really sums up I think not only for the Mercy world, but I think for women religious around the world, what we are about in the 21st century. So it's very short, and I would just like to read it. To celebrate our corporate word in a discordant society requires the courage of a deep faith and interior joy. We believe that God is faithful and that our struggle to follow Christ will extend God's reign of love over human hearts. We rejoice in the continued invitation to seek justice, to be compassionate, and to reflect mercy to the world.
I don't think we could have had a better sentiment or better words to conclude our interview on, Mary Pat. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Congratulations again from all of us from Mercy International Association on your well-deserved award, and thanks for giving us your time so generously on our podcast.
And Brenda, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, but also thank you for all you do in the name of Mercy International Center. Thanks.
That was Mary Pat Garvin. How lovely to listen to someone with such a gift for storytelling and for imparting her knowledge. And if I was to take one thing from that interview, it would be that line she shared from Mary Oliver: always keep some room in your heart for the unimaginable. So that's it for episode 9 of Mercy Echoes. I hope that you enjoyed our chat. We will be back with you soon with more voices from the Mercy world. Do give us a follow on Spotify. In fact, why not hit the subscribe button so as the next episode will land into your inbox. You can find out more on our website, mercyworld.org. Just look for the little podcast icon on the top of the homepage. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch to suggest a theme or a guest from the Mercy world that we might invite onto the podcast, please drop me an email, brendadrum@mercyinternational.ie. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.